Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Vital Health Community Health Topic Call. This is our very first one for 2018, and I'm very, very excited to be here to talk about actually one of my favorite topics, which is brain fog. And I always say that about topics, don't I? This is one of my favorite topics. The truth of the matter is I just love talking about health. I love talking about issues that are common to people that are reversible through nutritional and lifestyle means. So I just get really passionate and excited about this stuff. So brain fog. What is brain fog? Brain fog is that feeling of just you can't find the word. You can't find your keys. You can't remember somebody's name. Somebody's talking to you and you have to really, really focus on hearing what they're saying. When I first experienced this, it was back in the 1980s. And I was aware that people were talking to me, but it felt like there was a cloud between me and them. It felt like their words were coming through a cloud. They were a little bit garbled, and I was really focusing and trying to pay attention. Now, this was a scary thing for me, having been the valedictorian of my class and high school and then in college being in the top 10% of my class and feeling like, here I am, this smart person, this intelligent person, and I'm struggling with these little bitty things. Like, what's that person's name again? What were we talking about? So I called it brain fog. That was back in the day before the internet, and I didn't know anybody else that talked about brain fog, but I'm sure other people experienced it and also called it brain fog. I'm not sure when that became a popular expression, brain fog, but it's a very popular expression, and it aptly describes what's going on. I remember my husband, before he was my husband at the time, would say to me, what do you mean brain fog? What is brain fog? Clearly, someone who asks that question doesn't know what it is, because folks who have brain fog, they know what it is, even if they've never named it that before. You say, yeah, I have brain fog. They go, oh, that sounds like what I have. The other thing that was impacted was the short-term memory, like where did I put my keys? Where's my phone? And I still struggle with finding my phone because I don't pay attention. And that's a different situation. But I had so much trouble with it. And so I decided that, and then memory. I want to talk about memory. Memory loss is so common, and the rate of Alzheimer's is going up steadily. It's at epidemic proportions, and it's people who have had relatives with Alzheimer's tell me how miserable it is living with them. And people who have experienced those feelings say it's miserable. You know, it's just like you don't feel like you anymore. And so what I want to talk about today is ways that you can prevent and reverse brain fog and memory loss and help yourself not go down that path of Alzheimer's. And so many people are getting it and earlier and earlier and earlier. So let me talk about, like I said, three most common causes of brain fog and memory loss. And then with each cause, I'll talk about some solutions. And yeah, that's all I want to say there. So the three most common causes of brain fog and memory loss. And I'm going to do these in kind of reverse order, kind of like they do them on The Tonight Show or whatever else those shows are, because these are the order that I think are the most common or the most impactable. So number three is neurotransmitter imbalances. So what's that? Well, neurotransmitters are these little bitty chemicals that signal between nerves. So you have these nerves, and nerves control everything, right? The signals for your emotions, the signals for moving your arms and legs. And the signal comes from the brain and has to be transmitted down into the body. Neurotransmitters are the chemicals. That's what's called the synapses, the space between the nerves that tell the nerve previous to the nerve next what the signal is. What are we transmitting here? And the reason we need that is we cannot have a single nerve that goes from the brain all the way to the toes, right? They're signaled in short bursts, right? So there's signal to signal to signal, and neurotransmitters signal that. Well, when the neurotransmitters are out of balance, and there's several of them that are important, then the brain doesn't function as well. So, for example, We've got serotonin. We've got dopamine. We've got GABA. There's a whole bunch of others as well. Acetylcholine. There's a whole bunch. And when these, actually acetylcholine isn't, it's a precursor, glutamate, there's all kinds of them. Some of them are excitatory, some of them are inhibitory. And when these are out of balance, we have, an interruption in the signaling possibilities. So what causes that? Well, let's go back, because we're always about diet and lifestyle, right? Imbalances in nutrients can lead to neurotransmitter imbalances. So what nutrients? One is amino acids, because amino acids are the building blocks of neurotransmitters. And two are the B vitamins, especially vitamin B6, pyridoxine. When we're deficient in those nutrients, we can't create enough neurotransmitters. So there's not enough of those signaling molecules to be able to get the signal from one place to the other. So part of the brain may be signaling another part of the brain, but there's not enough neurotransmitter to make that transmission complete. So proteins, well, does that mean we have to eat a high protein diet, lots and lots of meat? No. It means we have to get adequate amounts of these proteins. It means we have to have adequate stomach acid in order to create these. In order to have adequate stomach acid, in order to break down the protein into amino acids, we have to have adequate zinc and magnesium and other minerals. So nutrient status is critical to these neurotransmitters working properly. What else impacts neurotransmitters? Well, there are some genetic SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. They're basically what the lay people call genetic defects. I don't use that term because they're not defects, they're differences. Right? So what we want is to be able to know, if you know your genetic SNPs, if you're having problems with this, and the foods that you're eating are not supplying you properly, then you know your genetic SNPs, you know you have a tendency to not produce enough GABA. Right? So when you don't produce enough GABA, you're anxious, and when you're anxious, you're producing more cortisol, and when you produce more cortisol, you're affecting your hippocampus, which is short-term memory. So when you know the genetic SNPs, you may know that you need to eat more of the precursor foods or take more of the precursor nutrients, and that's the value of it. You don't need to know your genetic SNPs. What you need to know is a healthy diet and lifestyle, good sources of protein, healthy eating habits, right? Sitting down, relaxing, being grateful before eating to help your digestion is going to help your with your stomach acid, which is going to help you absorb your protein, which is going to help you break down your protein into amino acids and get them absorbed. There are ways that you can supplement as an intermediate to this. Like if you're working on the diet and lifestyle and not quite there, what you do is you can take some of these amino acids, and you'd need to get some evaluation to see what of those are going to be the most important for you. I think that's it on the neurotransmitter. So neurotransmitter imbalance is super important. Neurotransmitter balance is related to proper levels of amino acids, B vitamins, and minerals. Proper stomach acid, good eating hygiene, as I like to call it. The last thing that affects the neurotransmitters is your microbiome. There's certain bugs that will produce neurotransmitters. So there's certain bugs that will produce GABA. There's certain bugs that will produce dopamine and help support you. And the gut is really important to have good functioning gut in order to have good neurotransmitters. So that's number three. That's the third most important one. The next one, which I think is super important and is actually an underlying cause of some of those neurotransmitter imbalances, is stress. And stress is physiologic stress, environmental stress, diet and lifestyle stress, and also that mental and emotional stress. So it's not just, well, I'm not stressed, I have plenty of money, my kids are happy. No, if you have some sort of infection hidden in your body, if you have some sort of imbalance in the body, if you're living in an area where there's toxins, if you're using those commercial air fresheners and cleaning products and makeup and all that, that have environmental stress, toxic stress on the body. So it's really a matter of identifying stresses and removing them. And we do this all the time. You've got lots of calls that we've had and in the library. Do you want to go check out the library of all the previous calls that we've had? And we have lots of information about that and how to detoxify your environment. The other thing that stress does, or the main thing that stress does, is it releases a hormone called cortisol. And when it releases cortisol, cortisol has all these amazing effects. It helps to raise your blood sugar so that you can run away from tigers. It helps you to, excuse me, I'm going to take a drink. My throat just got dry. Okay. So cortisol elevates the blood sugar. It elevates the blood pressure, so we push more blood to the extremities so you can run and fight and jump and hide. It increases heart rate, so you can run and jump and hide and all that. And then it also increases respiration rate. So all those things increase, which we need when we're in a fight-flight situation, when there's truly a physical danger. We don't need all of those things happening when we're sitting at our desk stewing over the latest news. But guess what? That happens then just as well, because that's what cortisol does. It's meant to protect us from danger. And it perceives a lot of things as dangerous and does that. Now, here's the other thing cortisol does, is it impacts the hippocampus. There's two main parts. Well, there's multiple parts of the brain, but I'm going to talk about two main parts of the brain. One is what's the prefrontal cortex, what I call the wizard brain. That's where all your high-level thinking happens. That's where you figure out physics problems, math problems, help your kids with their homework. That part is what gets inhibited with cortisol. And it makes sense, right? You don't need that part of your brain to run away from a tiger. The other part of the brain that gets impacted, that gets turned off, is the back, the hind brain. It's that primitive brain, that early brain, what's called the lizard brain. And that brain just helps you to be, you know, fight, flight, get out of the way. And so when you're under stress, you're in lizard brain. If you're under stress at work, you can't think straight. If you're in lizard brain, you can't solve that tough problem or deal with employees or employers or whatever. Your brain isn't functioning at full throttle when you're in lizard brain. And so you feel that foggy, that brain foggy, the memory is not quite there. Now, the other thing cortisol does is it damages the hippocampus. The hippocampus is a place that takes short-term memories, sticks them into long-term memories. So what happens is we lose that short-term memory. We're not able to just grasp things because they're not being stored. And so cortisol gets released. We have all these physiologic issues going on. We're not running away from a tiger, but our blood pressure is going up, our heart rate's going up, our respiration rate's going up, and the blood sugar's going up. The prefrontal cortex, the wizard brain, is shut down. The hippocampus is being damaged, and then the lizard brain takes control. Wow. Is that the way that your brain's going to function properly? No way, right? So cortisol is a big, big, big problem. The other thing that cortisol does is it impacts digestion. It slows down digestion because why? Well, when you're running away from a tiger, you don't want to be spending all the energy digesting food. It's not going to save your life. So the digestion is shut down. The enzyme production is shut down. The valves are closed. And the movement of food through the digestive tract halts or slows down. I wouldn't say halts. Nothing actually halts. So cortisol does all this stuff. Well, what did we just say before about the importance of digestion for neurotransmitters? Well, if we shut down digestion, we're not absorbing our minerals, our vitamins, and our amino acids. So this is going to impact the neurotransmitters. So stress has this cascading effect on the body. It's super, super, super important. super important. And if you want to get rid of brain fog, you've got to look at ways to manage stress. So how do you do that? One of my favorite techniques is heart math. And I'll just, we'll do one now. Most of you have done this before, but it doesn't hurt to do it again, does it? So I want you to put your right hand over your heart, your left hand over your belly, and then breathe really deeply so you expand your belly. And then let it go. Now do it again. And this time relax your shoulders and your neck as you exhale. Just let them drop and droop. Now I want you to think about something, an experience you've had in the past, a person you love, someplace where you can transport yourself temporarily, where you feel great. You feel blissful. You feel joyful. You feel relaxed. You feel happy. And you feel grateful for that experience, that person, that place. So just go ahead and do that. Do that for a few breaths. When you're ready, come back and just note how different you feel. If you're really focused on that, you will feel different. I feel much different. Just the breath alone activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which does the opposite of cortisol. It lowers blood sugar. It decreases heart rate. It decreases blood pressure. It dilates blood vessels. It enhances digestive flow. So whenever you're feeling stressed, you can do this and shift that stress in an instant. Now, I highly recommend that you practice this 4 or 5 times a day before you get into the stressful situation. But if you're in stressful situations all the time, just do it. I usually recommend that people do it right before they eat because it opens up the digestive tract and allows it to work. I recommend it right before going to sleep because it helps to take away the monkey mind and all the thoughts and stress that keeps a lot of people awake. And I recommend you do it when you first get up in the morning to activate that parasympathetic, that calm for the day instead of waking up and just like thinking of your to-do list and rushing and rushing and rushing. It makes a huge difference. So that's my favorite way to manage stress and to get that under control. And you will find that when you do that, your brain comes back. I'll give you an example. I was on a webinar once and there were like 1,000 people on there and the technology failed me. I mean, they couldn't hear me and some things went wrong. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And you know what I did? I took 30 seconds to do that. And guess what? I immediately came up with a solution. Oh, I could go here and I could go here because I activated my prefrontal cortex. The brain fog, the crazy memory, it went away just by doing that. So I highly recommend you practice it. It's one of the most amazing processes. The other stress management things you've heard of, meditation, yoga, all kinds of breathing techniques, those are great as well. Those are more things you do like a time. You set aside a half an hour, an hour. I meditate every morning for 20 minutes. Yoga takes some time to do. Any of the other techniques take some time. Heart math is wonderful to do even in addition to. I do heart math every day, but I also do the meditation every day. And it just makes all the difference in the world. So I would highly recommend you handle your stress. If there's physiologic stress, you know, if you have digestive issues, there may be a gut bug that's been living there for a while. Work through and get that. We have some resources here in the Vital community that you can go to and you can look at our digestive talk that we've done, multiples. You can also look at our GRAND program. Many of you have been through that. It takes you through step by step, head to toe, literally head to toe, how to get your digestion working properly. So I'd highly recommend you look at that. I think it's at happybellysystem.com. So that's it for that. Now let's look at the third one. The first one is blood sugar imbalance. So how does blood sugar imbalance? Well, the cortisol raises blood sugar. Other things raise blood sugar. Okay. We've got foods, processed foods, sugary foods, starches. So for some people can't even eat starchy foods without raising their blood sugar. And when the blood sugar goes up over time, like not the first time you ate a candy bar when you were four or whatever, but when you continue to eat the candy bars, you disrupt your blood sugar balancing system. You elevate your insulin, which is a hormone that takes the sugar and puts it into the cell so you can make energy. And that's the way it's supposed to happen, and that's why it usually does happen. You eat something, the blood sugar rises, no matter what you eat. I have an interesting thing about that. I've been doing a water fast. I'm on like 9 days, and all I've had to eat has been in the last 2 days. I'm 10 days, actually. So on day 9, I actually started eating, and I made a blended soup. I had a blended soup. And the blended soup was just broccoli, Brussels sprouts, ginger, onions, and zucchini. That's it. Simple ingredients, right? We made that the night before I drank the broth. That next day, 3 p.m, I drank the soup. And my blood sugar had been in the, 30s, 40s, 50s throughout the fast. And after eating the soup, my blood sugar went up to 98. Not a bad number. It's great. But I'm just saying, everything has the potential to raise your blood sugar because there's carbohydrate in those foods, in those vegetables that get broken down. So everything raises your blood sugar. And guess what? That's how you eat. That's how you survive, right? Fats and sugars are the two main sources of energy. So when you eat your meal and the blood sugar goes up, it's going to either go up a little bit, like with vegetable soup, or it's going to go up a lot, like with a candy bar. And when the blood sugar goes up, then insulin gets secreted by the pancreas. And then what happens is the insulin ideally escorts the sugar into the cells. And this happens beautifully until we start to abuse it. Until we start to eat too much pasta. Until we start to eat too many sugary things. Even honey sweetened, maple syrup, organic sweetened. Those things can do it too. Anything that's needed, that needs insulin to be absorbed into the system can activate this. And over time, when there's too much of this, plus the combination of stress, we end up with what's called insulin resistance, where the body just gets tired and it can't, the insulin receptors go, enough. I've had enough of this. This is too much sugar. It's hurting me. And they shut down. And then the elevated sugar is there. And that can lead to diabetes, metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance. Well, what does this have to do with your brain? Well, parts of your brain are needing the glucose. They need it. Your brain needs it. We were taught when I was in school that the brain was sophisticated enough to just take the insulin. The brain was sophisticated enough to take the glucose out of the cells. You know what? I'm tripping over my words today. Must be this water fasting. Let me get some water. Okay. So we were taught in school that the brain didn't need insulin, that it was sophisticated enough to just take the glucose out and put it into the cells so we can have good brain function. Recent studies have shown that that's not true. There are parts of the brain, many parts of the brain, several, that need to have insulin, and they have insulin receptors on their cells. So what happens if your memory center is got no sugar going into it, right? Because it's insulin resistant. What happens is you feel foggy. You feel brain fogged. Here's the thing. Recent studies over the last few years have been finding that the main cause of Alzheimer's, which is dementia that a lot of older people get, is, guess what? Insulin resistance. So Alzheimer's is actually a blood sugar disease. There's a book I've been reading, Bredesen. His name is Bredesen, and it's called The End of Alzheimer's. And he basically says, and he goes through this whole thing in the first chapter about there's no cure, there's no drugs, they've tried this, they thought it was these plaques, and when we created drugs to break down the plaques, it didn't do anything, and we tried this, and we tried that, and he's an experimenter. And his team, they're like, there's nothing that can help Alzheimer's. That's basically what his first chapter was saying. Like, why did you write a book, The End of Alzheimer's, if there's nothing that can do it? So he goes through this whole process, and then he says at the end, the primary cause of Alzheimer's is the standard American diet. The primary cause. And then he goes on to say that what they really found is that what doing drugs to break down the plaques was just treating the symptoms. Why are the plaques being formed? And why the plaques are being formed is environmental toxins, microbiome imbalances that are leading to toxins in the system that are leading to these plaques being formed, not enough nutrients, poor nutrition, too much sugar, so insulin resistance. The standard American diet is the primary cause of Alzheimer's, is what he said. Point blank. He didn't pussyfoot around it. And then he goes on in the rest of the book to talk about a lot of the studies and then also the approaches and all the things we talk about all the time. Detoxification, keeping your body clean, keeping your blood sugar balanced, getting your microbiome in order, reducing stress. And so all of this leads to brain fog and severe stage would be Alzheimer's. So what do you have to do with this? Is this new information? Yeah, there's a bunch of nutrients. B vitamins are important. Essential fatty acids are critical. They're essential for blood sugar dysregulation. So there's things you can do to support the stress system. Obviously, you want to reduce the stress. And then there's adaptogens like, you know, reishi, cordyceps, rhodiola, things like that. B vitamins are critical for the stress response. We use up a lot of vitamin B during the various stages of responding, the alarm state. B vitamins are important in blood sugar imbalance. Other nutrients that are important, chromium. Chromium is very depleted in our soil, so very little chromium in the food, and chromium's like it's insulin's escort, right? If we don't have enough chromium, the insulin can't work properly to get into the cells. Magnesium. Most people are deficient in magnesium. You need to be eating a lot of green leafy vegetables to get magnesium. There's other more fun sources of magnesium like chocolate, and a lot of the nuts and seeds are high in magnesium. And there's other nutrients, CoQ10, lipoic acid, vanadium. Those are more specific. We don't have time to get into the whole thing. We can do a whole course on blood sugar balance, which we did. It's the Sweet Spot Solution, sweetspotsolution.com. And we're going to be giving you a lot more resources on the sugar stuff over the course of the week. I've just put together a really nice quiz that you can take to see if you're at risk. And some of the symptoms on that quiz have to do with the brain fog, the memory, short-term memory. So we'll keep your eyes open, and we'll be sharing that with you in a little while, probably 2 weeks, around the 15th is when we're targeting to have that complete. So what else? Your brain is so critical to your function, right? It controls everything. It controls your heart. You know, we can have an argument about whether the brain is more important or the heart is more important, because the heart is what circulates the blood and the nutrients and the oxygen and everything to the tissues. The brain and the heart are in concert with each other. And here's the cool thing about the heart math technique I just talked about, is that it creates what's called coherence, brain-heart coherence. So it helps to coordinate that. They've taken measurements of blood pressure before and after doing a heart math session, and it drops. I've had people in the office and done that, and it's dropped by as much as 30 points. Now, you may not see that immediately when you're first practicing it because maybe you don't have the technique down. But if you have any hypertension issues, you have high blood pressure, make sure that you're working on that throughout your day. You can get the M-Wave device. The M-Wave device. It's a little thing that clicks up to your ears and then it hooks in either to the computer or the phone and you can watch what's going on while you're doing it. I like the little, you know, the thing that does on the phone. It's a lot easier to deal with. And you can watch and you can see, well, am I being effective with this? And then you really have to focus on clearing your brain, focusing on appreciation and all the things that you can do to appreciate. Write them down. Many of you have been through our 30-day stress transformation process. We have 30 days of audio messages. And every day for 30 days, you get a message from me and I introduce these techniques one at a time, one at a time. And then I give you the reminder when to do it, how to do it. And a lot of people love those and they download them to their telephone or their iPad or iPod or whatever they have, whatever kind of listening device you like. They download them and they listen to them on a daily basis, even after the 30 days. And it's a program where we just let you do it forever. You know, you can do it. And at the end of the 30 days, you just click again and you get the messages again. And a lot of people that reminder coming in the inbox says, oh yeah, I forgot. I got to do that. But if you're a person that doesn't watch your inbox until late at night, you know, you just don't watch your email then it's not going to work for you. Then download them on your computer, on your phone, and set a little timer message on there. That's one thing I tell people to do with their phones. There's so many great things you can do in here is that we put the we put them on the phone, and then what you do is you go to the reminder thing. The little, I set alarms all the time. There's an alarm thing in the clock on an iPhone. I don't know how it works on an Android, but I'm sure they're similar. And I just set an alarm. I want to be able to, okay, I'm going to take a break and do my burst training. I'm going to take a break and do my heart math. And I just set that on my clock. And it reminds me. It's a gentle reminder. So ways that you can take care of yourself. It's really important that you put self-nurture at the top of your list. I know that you may be a mom or a grandma. You may be a teacher. You may have a partner. You may be taking care of a aging parent. But you've got to take time for you. Because if you don't, your brain is going to suffer as well as the whole rest of you. Right? So this is focusing on brain and brain fog. And what I want to do is summarize the causes, and then I'm going to summarize the action steps, and then I'm going to open it up for questions. So three main causes of brain fog and memory loss, neurotransmitter dysfunction. Neurotransmitter dysfunction can be caused by poor digestion, microbiome imbalance, deficiencies of B vitamins and minerals. And what can you do? You can work on your digestion to get those nutrients in. You can look at your diet and make sure that you're getting those nutrients in. If you're eating a standard American diet or something close, you are not getting enough B vitamins. No way, because they're depleted in the foods. You may be, the second point is stress. What can you do? Stress causes elevations in sugar. It causes depletion of a lot of nutrients. It causes the turning on of the lizard brain, turning off the wizard brain. It affects digestion and blood flow. So what can you do? Well, we taught you heart math technique. You can add meditation. And you know what? You can only meditate. You don't have to do an hour of meditation. For years, I didn't do meditation because I thought all the rules said I had to do an hour and I should do it. Not like when I first get up and not right before I go to bed. It should be in the middle of the day and there were too many rules. I meditate for 20 minutes first thing in the morning now because I've gotten in the habit. But while I was getting in that habit, I would just meditate when I could. And I have a device called the Muse, which helps me to do that. And it reads my brain waves and tells me when I start to think too much and then it brings me back. And I started out with it. I would do 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 5 minutes before going to sleep, 5 minutes in the morning. I would just do 5 minutes whenever. And that worked. And then I got in the habit. Now I really like starting the day. And I set my alarm for 20 minutes earlier than I really need to get up to deal with my day so that I can meditate. Now this morning I got up early and my alarm didn't go off. I got up earlier than my alarm. I woke up earlier than my alarm and I laid there. I said, oh, my alarm's going to be ringing in a little bit. I'll just lay here and, you know, and I laid there and, I went to sleep, back to sleep, and I didn't before I could meditate. And so when I got up, I finally went, oh my God, it's almost 10 o'clock. I have a meeting at 10 o'clock. I'd gone to bed too late. That's why I got up so late. And, I had time for 3 minutes. So I meditated for 3 minutes. That was it. I'll meditate later for the rest of my time. So really deal with this. And if you have any issues, if you have chronic gut stuff, you may have a gut infection, or it's telling you that your eating habits are poor, that there's things in your diet that need to be addressed. So fix your gut. Super important. I look at blood sugar and gut as the critical factors in the rest of the system. Because if you're not digesting well and your blood sugar is erratic, there's no way you're going to have good organ function. There's no way your brain's going to function properly. There's no way that your adrenals, thyroid, all those other organs and glands, your sex hormones, they're not going to function properly if you've got impaired digestion and blood sugar. And finally, there's good old blood sugar. Blood sugar imbalances have been found to be primary cause of Alzheimer's, and you're just not getting the right sugar to the brain. And there's so much else with blood sugar. And we'll be talking a lot more about that over the next month. I'll be giving you some really good resources for that. So you have it. That's the primary causes of brain fog and some of the things you can do. And what you're going to see is when I talk, everything comes back to diet and lifestyle. Now, I've given you some specific nutrients here, right? Like with blood sugar, chromium and magnesium and DHA and lipoic acid and things like that. But it's really down to what are you eating? How are you eating? It's not just what you eat, but how you eat. Are you eating in a nice, relaxed, calm state? Or are you eating under stress? And those are things you can control. You have 100% control of what you put in your mouth. And some people may argue with that, like, no, when I go to my mother's house, I don't. That's not true. You always have 100% control. You can always bring your own food. You can always politely tell relatives or friends that I'm on a special diet. You can even blame your doctor. My doctor put me on a special diet for my digestion or for my blood sugar imbalance or whatever, and I'm going to eat some different things. You can tell them in advance and say, look, I'll just bring my own. I don't want to put you out. But if you want to prepare something, these are the things I can and can't eat. You have 100% control over what you put in your mouth. Not 90%, not 50%, but you have 100% control. It's always a choice. And every choice you make makes a difference. It makes a difference in how you feel today. It makes a difference in your long-term health. Every single choice contributes either to you being wildly successful and healthy in the future or not. And so you have control of this. Yes, sometimes there's more complicated things. There's genetic factors that do need to be looked at. There's previous exposures or surgeries or other things that are going to impact you. But still, it comes down to you have the choice. You have the choice whether to exercise or sleep. And sometimes, really tuning in, sleep is the higher priority. Right? You've got to tune in, but every choice you make makes a difference. And I want you to be empowered to make the absolute best choices that you can. So thank you for listening, and I will open this up for questions. So if you have a question, you just stop the recording and start a new one. If you have a question, go ahead and type star 2 on your telephone keypad if you're on the telephone, or there's a little device where you can do it on the web if you're on the web call, or type it into the chat or the Q&A box. So any questions about anything? I talk about a lot here. You can ask questions about the content of what I shared. You can ask questions about, you know, concerns about yourself or somebody else within this framework of just this topic. So Janine asked, B6, should it be taken in the morning or before bed? That's great. And it depends, Janine. Now, some people who are taking therapeutic doses of amino acids want to take their B6 with that. So if I'm testing somebody for depression, I suspect a serotonin deficiency, I'm going to put them on 5-HTP. I mean, obviously we're looking at diet and lifestyle, but if I'm going to therapeutically intervene, I would have them take 5-HTP and I would have them take the B6 with it. And usually I would take the B6 at night in that particular case. Sometimes we do an extra dose in the afternoon. Tyrosine for dopamine, I tend to dose earlier in the day. So I would give them their B6 with that. If you have sleep issues, B6 is great to be taken at night because it helps to make serotonin and then melatonin. And melatonin is important for sleep. So that's a great question. Why does the page say overcoming the flu? It's because my team, once again, didn't pay attention and change it from last time. So Lynn, will you make a note to let Doreen know that she needs to talk to Jazzy again about changing it every time? When I set them up, they say the right name. What book is that? Is that The End of Alzheimer's, the book that I was talking about? Yeah, it's a great book. Jay says, I tend to take these at the same time, thinking they may have synergies, at least B12 and folinic acid together. Yeah, so I would definitely take the B12 and folinic acid. I'm not a fan of B-complex that includes B12 because the B12 tends to get absorbed better if it's sublingual. And I also find that, or if it's taken orally, it's a liposomal. And I haven't seen combo Bs as liposomal. I've seen B12 and folinic acid. I've seen the liquid, like ionic state liquid ones. I've seen liquids, and you can do individual ones, and there's liquid Bs that are together as well. That's going to be absorbed better. But it, with the B12, I like to make sure it's either sublingual or it's a liposomal. They do have synergies, and I like to take, so rather than taking isolated Bs, I like to have people take the rest of them, except the B12 you can take together. I just want it in a separate form as opposed to a capsule. They do have synergy. So a lot of times, like Thorne makes these great products. If you want to dose somebody on B6, it's called B6 Complex. And so it has all the rest of them plus B6. If you're really suspicious that you need extra B2, they have a B2 Complex. So they have them together. Now, if you've got indications that several of the Bs are low, but some of them are not, you know, some of the background Bs, you can take a B complex, and then at the same time you could take the extras. But the exception would be, I would not take the B complex with the riboflavin, niacin, riboflavin and thiamine. Those are the two that tend to increase energy. B12, sometimes people can't take at night either. But you want to take them during the day, but B6 you'd want to take at night if you have sleep issues or neurotransmitter issues or you're taking 5-HTP. So those are some of the exceptions. But yeah, you're right, Jay. It does tend to be good together. Susan, what role does bifidobacter play in neurotransmitter? I'd heard that somewhere that CMDS that the older person, the lower their bifido. Yeah. So bifido is an interesting one. It's affected by genetics. There's a SNP called FUT2. When people have it, they need way more bifidus than other people. And bifidus, you can't get enough bifidus. It's really hard to get too much bifidus. Bifidus is important. It does lower as people age, but it's also that most of the probiotic supplements that people take are very low in bifidus and very high in lacto. So I tend to, with people with digestive stuff going on, I tend to add bifidus. I like people to take extra bifidus. And it definitely, it's important in just forming the microbiome to be a healthy microbiome that will help make GABA and dopamine and serotonin well for you. So that's how it helps. Kim, what medications can contribute to dementia and Alzheimer's? Oh boy, I don't have that list memorized. That book will definitely talk. It talks a lot about them, so I don't know off the top of my head which medications. Sorry about that. All right, so that's it for that. Let me look in the Q&A. We'll see. Nope. Okay, let me look at the conference line. Anybody have questions? Nobody has questions that they want to raise their hands, so I don't get to talk to anybody. I feel lonely. All right. I mean, back at chat, and otherwise we'll call it a day. How was this? Did you learn anything? I know that a lot of this is a repeat, but it's repetition helps. But it's making the connection that, oh, wait, those diet and lifestyle changes I'm making over here are also good for me over here. And I think the more you learn and the more you understand, the more you realize how important it is. Back to my own brain fog story. So I had this horrible brain fog, and it was horrible. And so I started doing allergy elimination, and I started eating better, getting rid of the sugar and all that. And I would have good days and bad days. And I would have these days where I felt great and lucid and super. I'm like, yay, I'm healed. And then a few days later, I'd be back again. So I spent a long time trying to figure that out. And when I realized it wasn't just the allergens, there were some foods that were not, I wasn't allergic to, quote unquote, but that were toxic for me and made a huge difference. When I did was a cleanse. I did a fast, water fast. And after that, I never had the brain fog again. Now I still get brain fog occasionally when I'm exhausted, when I've gone too long, because I have some bad sleep habits, when I've gone too long without sleeping regularly. And, you know, it might be I've flown overnight and then I stayed up all day and I've been up for, I don't know, 27 hours, 36 hours, and my words just won't come out. There's brain fog there. That's normal brain fog because my brain didn't have sleep to clear it out. You know, insufficient sleep, it should have been on that list, but it really, it's one of the causes of blood sugar. But insufficient sleep is a huge cause too, because at night your body's cleaning house. At night, your body's doing all this detox stuff to get rid of the extra stuff, the metabolic waste products you've generated during the day. So if you're not sleeping enough, you're not clearing that, and that makes a huge difference. Lynn.
And I know you touched a little bit on this, but.
I'm not hearing you, Lynn. Are you speaking?
I am.
I'm not hearing you. Is anybody else hearing
Lynn?
Can
anybody hear me?
Is anybody hearing Lynn?
Yeah, they're hearing me.
Yes? Oh, there's something so bizarre. Let me see. Maybe it's here. Go ahead, Lynn. Try again.
Okay, can you hear me now?
That isn't fixed. I assumed in Cinchella Seminar fixed it. The problem has been happening for a couple of weeks, and I needed to call in. So let me call in. Now I have to look for the number. When can you put the number in here? It's 4. I think that's it. No. No. Well, I've got to find it. So sorry, guys, but there's an issue technologically, and I've rebooted my computer multiple times. We're going to have to get their support. I have to find the thing. How do I find it to go backwards? All right. I have the number here. So I used to have this number memorized, but I stopped using it. I started using the computer.
Sorry. 1 is not a valid conference ID. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Moderator ID accepted. All guests are currently muted. To unmute all guests, press 9. For help with host options, press *0. You will now be connected with the conference.
Can't wait to mute myself.
Okay. Speak, Lynn. Let me see if I can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, and it's coming through my phone.
Okay. I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
What I wanted.
The echoing. Are you? Because I'm going through my phone in the.
I don't really hear an echo.
No. Okay, good. Go ahead.
So what I was wondering about, if you could explain further the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's.
Oh, that's a great question. Okay. It's not a clear distinction, but let me. Okay. Can you still hear me?
I can.
Okay. So Alzheimer's has a specific set of symptoms in addition to the dementia, the memory issues. They wander, they get aggressive, and they can actually see the plaques when you do a brain scan. Okay? In dementia, there's impairment of the memory very similar to Alzheimer's, but you generally don't have the aggression, the wandering behavior, and some of the other things, and there's no signs on a brain scan.
There's no what?
There's no, you don't see the plaques when you do a brain scan.
Ah. Okay.
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 Very similar from the standpoint of what the family perceives, except you don't have to worry about the person walking out the front door and not coming home. Right? My mother-in-law was diagnosed with dementia, and it could have been Alzheimer's or not, but she didn't have that aggressive thing. Like, she didn't wander away and, you know, get lost. And I don't know if they did a brain scan or not. They just said it was dementia versus Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Okay. The Alzheimer's has got a genetic component to it. So when you have the genetic tendency and you have the environmental factors we discussed, you can develop the Alzheimer's. The dementia, I think, is more of a, mainly it's environmental stuff. It's mainly the toxic exposures, the blood sugar imbalances, the nutrient imbalances. Many years of neglect. Alzheimer's tends to come on, I don't know, in the 60s or so. There's early Alzheimer's. One of the things we didn't talk about was gluten. There are a lot of studies that show that gluten intolerance contributes to early Alzheimer's. So we expect it to come on in, say, the 60s and 70s, if it's going to come on, and we find it coming on in the 40s, 50s, 30s even. And they found that people with gluten sensitivity, the gluten triggers the Alzheimer's. So that's why I'm a big fan of just go gluten-free. You don't know all your genes. You don't know all the tendencies. We can't look inside. We don't have the Star Trek device that you scan and go, oh, yeah, you're good. Oh, yeah, you're not. You know what I mean? So just get rid of the sugar. Get rid of the gluten. Get rid of the alcohol. Get rid of the stuff that's impairing your body from doing a good job. And if you're finding that that's a problem, you're against it, you're opposing it, then I would be looking at the psychological factors, right? The emotional factors, the energetic of why do I need this? Why am I unwilling to give up certain things? I remember I had this conversation, I've had it with my husband many times, we had it again last night, and we've been doing a cleanse, we're going off this cleanse, and he's thinking, when can I have this? And when can I have that? And like, why do you need it? Look how good your body's doing right now. Look at the good things you're doing. Why do you need to eat the popcorn? Why do you need to go back to the problem? Right? So if there's an emotional component there. So we talked about this for a little bit, and I said, you know, he has a family history of heart disease. And we, after the Joel Kahn talk yesterday, I told him about the test that you can do to test status, and I wanted him to also do a VAP test all his lipid fractions. And I said, you know, you have this family tendency. If you want to make it happen, like your other brothers are on cholesterol, right? Your father had heart attacks. Your mother had stroke. There's cardiovascular system problems really there. Why don't you just take out the insurance policy on your body by making good choices? And I said to him, and this is, I said, so many people, if you put it this way, you don't want to do it. You go, okay, here you go. What is it that you like? Oh, you like ice cream. Great. You don't want to give up ice cream. When can I eat ice cream? How can I eat ice cream? Okay, you like ice cream. You like your life, right? So if you had to choose,
right.
Are you willing to go to your deathbed for ice cream? Are you willing to die in order to have ice cream? And he says, of course not. So, okay, make those choices. Every choice makes a difference. every choice matters. And when you make that choice to say, I choose life, I choose quality of life, I choose having a robust and energetic and love-filled life and to make a contribution to the world, you know what? You're not going to do it when you're eating ice cream. You're really not.
Right.
It's going to get you down. And even if you have one of those really strong genetic constitutions, George Burns said to be, you know, okay, he's got rock solid. He died in his 90s. Imagine his quality of life and how much longer he would have lived if he didn't do all those things. Because things get to you. They get you. They get you down. And so I say, just think about every choice. Every time you're going to, you know, reach for something to put at the end of your fork, what's the difference? I know that it can be challenging. I know that during this fast, the first few days, everything I saw, I wanted to eat. And every time I saw it, I just said, don't show me chocolate. I'd see chocolate. And I know I can make healthy chocolate, but I can overeat healthy chocolate. And I'd see it, and I'd go, oh, I want that. I want that. And I had to just sit with myself and say, you're choosing to clean out your body right now. And it's not been hard over the last, whatever, 30 years I've been doing this. But at the beginning, it was hard. But it started out, it got easier and easier the more committed I was to the outcome. I'm committed. And I said to him, which would you choose? If I said, he says, oh, I love popcorn. Okay. And I'm not saying that popcorn's going to kill him, but it contributes, right? It contributes to insulin resistance if somebody's sensitive. And he is. He has all those genes. So if I gave you a choice between popcorn and life, which would you choose? He goes, life, of course. I said, okay, every choice matters and it's cumulative. No, popcorn's not going to kill you once, but if you have a genetic tendency towards insulin resistance, it's going to continue. And if you also do the coffee with the, you know, the almond milk or whatever it is, commercial almond milk, and he goes out, he goes visits his sister a lot, and they love to go to restaurants, and he's eating greasy food with them. You know, it all adds up. Even if most of the time, you know, even if like 80% of the time you're eating well, if you're consistently doing those other things, it's going to be a problem. If once or twice a year you indulge and you're already feeling well, it's not going to really be a problem. For me, I wouldn't do it. I'm not compromising my body because I know how I'll feel afterwards. I'll feel crappy. I don't want to feel crappy. But every choice matters. So, you know, just make those choices. And if you're having trouble sticking with it, there's an emotional underpinning. Like he has this feeling of, like, comfort when you get that. But what's missing in your life where you can give yourself that comfort? For me, you know, I don't need food for comfort. I'll go take a bath. I'll go for a walk. You know, I'll read a good book. I'll communicate with somebody I love that I haven't talked to in a while. Like, there's other things you can do to get the comfort. But when we reach for food for comfort, it's killing us.
Right. Yeah. So true. Like Susan says here, back to the big why.
The big why. And more and more, I've been talking about the big why for a long time, you know, since you've heard it. But this is big now. I mean, there's the guy on TED Talk that did an amazing talk. I mean, remember when that first came out, one of my team members sent it to me. He says, oh, this is what you say all the time. Right? It's big now. He made it big. There's books on it. People are looking at it. The big why. The big why. Mm-hmm. Why do you want this? Why do you want to be healthy? I want to be healthy so I feel good all the time, number one, and so I can help other people. I can make a big contribution in the world, and I can go out and enjoy nature, my family, and I just like feeling good. I just like feeling good, and I want that every moment, and no amount of chocolate pudding pie is going to satisfy
right.
me. Like, I said this to somebody I was speaking to on the phone a few weeks ago, and it just really, really had met her recently, and I said, yeah, you know, we trade 30 seconds on the tongue for what we really want. 30 seconds on the tongue for what we really want. Is it worth it? 30 seconds of pleasure, and then it goes to the rest of you and doesn't cause pleasure anymore. For what you really want, which is whether it's to play the piano. I had one person who had really wanted to play the piano, but her fingers were all stiff and she couldn't, right? So we got her there. then, you know, there's other people. One person wanted to climb to the top of, they were going on a trip with her husband, and they were going to go climb and, you know, with a Sherpa, what do they call that, a Sherpa, going to the top of the Himalayas. And she wanted to be able to have the strength and stamina to carry her camera equipment, which is a photographer, and it was heavy. And she wanted to capture it all. And this is, you know, before iPhones were so small, but you don't get iPhone, yeah, I don't know, your battery and all that. So she sent me a picture. She dedicated, she did her stuff, she sent me a picture from the top of the Himalayas. She said, here you go, thank you. So what is it you really want? Is there a job, yep, a career that you haven't set upon because you're scared? Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff. Yep. It's really that big why, and we teach you, anybody that's been to SIV or Shine, we always go back to that big why and have you do it. And mm-hmm. revisiting your big why on a regular basis. Really good. And if you want, get those books. Start with why and then find your why. Two books. I've listened to them on audio.
Yep.
And they're great. Thank you.
Yep.
Just a few other questions in here I want to make sure I get. Rhonda.
And I was just reminding you that you have a call at 105, don't you?
I have a call at 105. Okay. Got to go, guys. Thank you, everybody. Bye.